The parak continues to list the various blemishes which would invalidate a kohen from serving in the Beis HaMikdash, and there are many blemishes which invalidate the kohen but would not invalidate a bechor, a firstborn animal, or any animal which has been designated as a korban from being bought as a korban. If the animal had an equivalent blemish, it would not necessarily invalidate the animal. However, it's learnt from a pasuk that anything which makes a kohen look slightly abnormal and not like an ordinary human being, something of his appearance is abnormal, even if it doesn't make him handicapped in any way, and one might not define it as a blemish or a wound. Since he looks different, that is enough to invalidate him from serving in the Beis HaMikdash. And as such, although regarding an animal, there was an argument whether if the upper lip of the animal went over the lower lip, in Perek Vov Mishnah Tes, there was an argument whether that's considered to be a blemish. And if the lower lip comes out and goes over the upper lip, at least according to one opinion, it's only a blemish if the entire jaw comes outwards, but not only the lip. However, when it comes to a koyein, sfoso hol yonoi devas ala tachtoina, if his upper lip went over his lower lip, vatachtoina devas ala yonoi, or if the lower lip came out and went over the upper lip, harizemum, this is considered to be a blemish which would invalidate him from serving in the Beis HaMikdash. Mishanitlu shinov, and if his teeth come out, there's a discussion as to how many teeth need to come out to be in this category. So this is not considered to be a blemish, and as well as that, it also doesn't make him look totally abnormal. We've heard of people whose teeth have fallen out. However, midrabbonon posel, he would be invalid from serving the Beis HaMikdash from playing Marisa Ayin because of his appearance, that he doesn't really look the part to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Dadov shoichvin kshal isha, if his breasts rest downwards, they bulge like those of a woman. Kresi tzova, if his stomach bloats and sort of flops. Tabura yotze, if his belly comes out more than is considered normal. Nichpe afilu achas liyomim, if he has epileptic fits, even once in a large amount of days. Rach katsus ba'olov, if he experiences depression or melancholy, hamushkon, one whose testicles are extra large, while gever, or somebody whose male organ is extra long, ain't no beats him. If he does not have testicles, and the Gemara explains this to mean that he has two testicles, but they are in the same pouch, the same pocket, as opposed to being on either side of the male organ, or if he only has one testicle, zelmerech oshech on batoirah. This is the type of blemished koyein which is described in the Torah as meroyach oshech. It's referring to somebody who either has only one testicle or whose testicles are not split into two different pockets. Rabbi Shmuel says, kol shenimruchu ashochov, the meroyach oshech of the Torah, which the Torah is talking about, refers to somebody whose testicles have dissolved. Rabbi Akiva says, kol shenruach ba'ashochov, it refers to somebody whose testicles have a lot of wind in them, meaning they've swollen and being blown up larger than their real size. Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus says that actually Merach Oshech is talking about a totally different type of person and appearance, and that is Kosh Merav Chashuchim. It refers to somebody who has a very dark appearance, even if he's not totally black, but if he has a very dark skin, that would be considered a Merach Oshech who would not be valid to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, once again, although these four different opinions argue as to what exactly the definition of a Mareach Oshech of the Torah, that which the Torah speaks about, is, everybody agrees that all of the aforementioned blemishes are significant enough to invalidate someone from serving the Beis HaMikdash. The question is that the example which the Torah was referring to or not? Mishnah Vov, the list of blemishes which apply to a kohen continues. Hamakish Bekarsulov, one whose ankles knock against each other as he walks, due to the fact that his feet aren't straight, but they come inwards at the back. Uva'akuvoisov, or if his knees knock together as he walks, because this is the opposite case of the previous case, where the front of his feet bend inwards. They're directed inwards, and therefore when he walks, his knees knock against each other. Uva'alpikovahoikel, these are two types of people who have blemishes, which the Mishnah is about to define. Ezu ikel, what is considered to be an ikel? Anybody who puts the two soles of his feet next to each other, Not when he's walking, but when he's sitting down, he puts his the soles of his feet together. And when he tries to put his feet together, the inaku voice of Neshkes Zelozoi, he's not able to get his knees to touch each other, because his knees bend outwards. And we're going to understand that the mission is about to define now what a Baal Piko is, and that is Piko Yetzomi Gudoloi, somebody who has an extra growth, such as an extra finger or an extra toe, coming out of the area of his thumb, that is also considered to be a blemish. If his heel goes backwards, such that it looks as if his leg comes down and doesn't end at the back of his foot, such that all of his foot is in front of his leg, but part of his foot is behind the back of the bottom of his leg. The sole of his foot is as wide as that of a goose, and that means that it's not really long and narrow, but rather it's roundish and not shaped like a regular human foot. If his fingers or toes, instead of growing straight next to each other, they grow one coming over the other one in an abnormal way, or if they are webbed, the skin attaches the fingers higher up than where the knuckles are, like on a regular human being's hand or feet. So here it depends. At a perek, if there is skin until the middle joint of the finger, of the fingers or the toes, then kosher, he's still considered valid to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. But lamatum in a perek, if it's even lower, meaning it goes even higher towards the end of one's fingers, all the way to the upper joint, then it would be indeed a blemish. But v'chatocha, if he manages to cut that skin and to separate the fingers out once more, then kosher, he would once again be fit to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Hosabayoseres, if he had an extra finger or an extra toe, v'chatocha, and he cut it off, im yesh bo etzem, if the finger or toe which was extra had a bone, it wasn't just some extra flesh, but it had a real bone, so now it's considered to be that the kohen is lacking one of his limbs. So posel, he would be invalid, you would not be fit to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, v'im lav, but if it didn't have a bone, it's not considered to be a real limb, and therefore kosher, he would be fit to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, because he's not considered to be somebody who is missing one of his limbs. Now what happens if Yosef Yodov Raglov, if he has an extra finger or toe on both of his hands and both of his feet, such that sheish v'sheish esim v'arba. It's like the person who is described in Sefer Shmuel, who had six of each fingers and toes, altogether making 24 fingers and toes. Rabbi Huda says that he is considered to be valid and fit to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, and according to Rabbi Huda, when the Tanakh described this person in this way, it's a praise. It's showing his physical strength and size, not in a derogatory manner. However, the Chachamim say that he is invalid to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, and that actually this description in the Tanakh was meant to be a derogatory, negative reflection of this person's appearance. Hashulet b'shteyodov, one who is ambidextrous, meaning he can do things with both his right and his left hand. Rebbe Poisel, Rebbe invalidates such a person from serving the Beis HaMikdash because we view his real stronger hand as being weaker than normal. So when we see that both of his hands are equally skilled, we associate that with the fact that his real stronger hand is actually weaker than it's supposed to be. However, the Chachamim invalidate him because they look at it as quite the opposite, that his weaker hand is actually as strong as his stronger hand. Hakushi, somebody who has black skin, like an Ethiopian, v'hagichar, or he has very reddish skin, v'halavkon, or very white skin, like an albino, v'hakipeach. If he's very tall and thin, v'hananos, or a dwarf, v'hachirish, somebody who is deaf and dumb. It could be that even if he's only deaf, he's also included in a chirish in this case, v'hashete, somebody who is a fool. He hasn't managed to mature beyond the maturity age of a young boy. The shikar, somebody who becomes drunk even from substances which don't make most people drunk, such as milk, uvalin goim tohirim, and somebody who has a tsoras-like spot which has been ruled pure. Tsoras is a type of skin disease of having spots, and it comes to a person as a result of certain sins, and a kohen would check whether indeed it's considered to be tzaras or not. Now, even if the kohen rules that it is not tzaras, and therefore the person does not become tomei, impure, according to the laws of one who has tzaras, nevertheless, he still has a spot which is very similar, and although he's still pure, he's tohar, it's nevertheless it is significant enough to be considered a blemish. And so he would not be able to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Says the Mishnah, all of these blemishes which we've listed over the past few Mishnayos, pesulin ba'odom, are invalid. They are considered to be blemishes which invalidate a human being, a kohen, from serving in the Beis HaMikdash, or chashein ba'behema. However, if an animal had an equivalent blemish, it would still be fit and valid for being bought as a korban. The truth is, this last part is probably referring only to the last few wounds and blemishes which are mentioned, like somebody who has different coloured skin, etc. And on that, from Shimon Gamliel, Omer, Shimon Gamliel says, Shoito ba'behema, a animal which it can be recognised as being a fool, not even having the sense of a regular animal, enomina mufrar, is not considered to be a high quality animal, and therefore it should ideally not be bought as a korban. Rabbi Eliezer says, Af bali dildulin, even somebody who has an extra piece of flesh dangling from his body at any point where it's not really supposed to be there, it's an extra piece of body part of the flesh, pasulim ba'odom v'chashein ba'behema, that is also something which invalidates a kohen from serving the Beis HaMikdash, but would not invalidate an animal from being bought as a korban. Mishnah Zayin, Elu k'shem ba'odom u'chsun ba'behema, the following blemishes are fit, and they are not invalidations for a person, for a kohen, but they do invalidate an animal. Oysev es benoi, there is a prohibition of slaughtering a animal and its child on the same day. At least according to this Mishnah, it applies even to a male animal, not just the mother, but even the father. So if, let's say, an animal's father had been slaughtered that day, then it's forbidden to bring that animal's son, if it was a bechor, a firstborn, or any other korban, it's forbidden to bring that animal on that day as a korban. Or trefa, one who has an internal wound which forbids it to be eaten, it also cannot be bought as a korban. But if a kohen has an internal wound, even if it makes him likely to die, he would still not be invalid from serving the Beis HaMikdash, because one of the conditions to be considered a blemish for a kohen is, like we learned, that it has to be something which is not hidden. If it's a hidden blemish which is not recognizable, then it would not invalidate the kohen from serving in the Beis HaMikdash. V'yotze dofen, somebody who was born via a cesarean section, where the womb was cut open, so if it's an animal, then it would not be valid as korban, but if it's a kohen, he would be able to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the next two invalidations, interestingly, there are many who delete this from the Mishnah, because they are of the opinion that even a kohen would be invalidated by this, but our Mishnah does have it written inside, which suggests that it would be a difference between a kohen and an animal, which is nevda b'hen avira. If a sin was done with the animal, somebody committed bestiality with that animal, v'shehemes hisa adam, or if the animal has killed somebody, the animal would be invalid from being bought as a korban, but the equivalent in a case of a kohen, he would not be invalidated from serving the Beis HaMikdash. Hanotzei noshim ba'avira, one who marries a woman in sin, he's forbidden to marry that woman. For example, if a kohen marries a divorcee, which is forbidden, posel, he's invalid from serving the Beis HaMikdash, ad yadir hanoya, until he makes a vow not to benefit from her. Meaning the truth is, either he can divorce her. If he divorces her, then certainly he's able to continue serving the Beis HaMikdash. The Mishnah is coming to show, though, that even if he has not yet divorced her, but at least he has made a vow not to benefit from her, and he makes the vow in such a way that he's not able to annul it, at least not for the sake of a mitzvah, and this would obligate him to divorce her. If he's not able to benefit from her, then he's obligated to divorce her. Already from that stage where he's obligated to divorce her, even though he has not yet divorced her, he would be able to continue serving in the Beis HaMikdash from that point onwards. Hamitamela Mesim, a kohen who allows himself to become impure from dead bodies, which is forbidden for a kohen to just become tomei like that. Posel, he's also invalid from serving the Beis HaMikdash because he's not keeping to the laws of the kohanim. Actually, Kabbalah Lov Shleim Tamela Mesim, until he accepts upon himself not to continue allowing himself to become impure from dead bodies. It's interesting to note that over here we don't require him to make a vow to that regard. And the reason for this, the Gemara explains, is because one does not have any particularly strong desire to become impure. unlike in the previous case where one certainly does have a strong desire to have forbidden relations with the woman to whom he was married. Perek Ches Mishneh Aleph. The subject matter of the eighth perek is the firstborn of a human being. And just like an animal, this applies only if the firstborn is a firstborn male. And there are really two different areas in which the firstborn status has significance. The first one is regarding the obligation of Pidyon HaBen, which is an obligation which, ideally speaking, rests upon the father to redeem his firstborn son by paying the sum of 5 Sela coins to a Kohen. If he himself doesn't do it, then the son will need to do it himself, to redeem himself by paying a sum of 5 Sela coins to a Kohen, and he'll do that when he reaches the age of Bar Mitzvah. But ideally, his father needs to do it on the 30th day after the firstborn son is born. Now, the exact definition for the firstborn in regards to these laws is given by the Torah that he needs to be Peter Rechem B'Yisrael, the one who opened up the womb, and it is therefore dependent upon being the firstborn of the mother. Although it's an obligation upon the father, it needs to be the firstborn of the mother, such that it could emerge that one person, one father, will need to redeem multiple firstborn sons because they will all be firstborns to their mother. The other area in which the status of the firstborn has significance is in the laws of inheritance. According to the Torah law, only male sons inherit their father upon his death, and the inheritance is split into equal portions. However, the firstborn son receives a double portion, such that if, for example, there are 3 sons, the inheritance will be split into 4, and the firstborn will take 2 out of 4 portions, and the other 2 sons will take the remaining single portion each. Now, what exactly defines the firstborn in this case? The Torah describes him as being Reishis Oinoi, the first of the father's strength. The word oinoi is also related to the word aninus oinein, which means mourning over somebody who has died, and therefore, firstly, we see that the Torah is basing the firstborn status on the firstborn of the father, not the mother. It's not the first one who opens up the womb of the mother, but it has to be the firstborn of the father. And in addition, it has to be somebody who the father would have mourned over that child's death. So if the child was not born alive, then it wouldn't be considered the firstborn, and therefore the next child to be born would receive that status of the firstborn, because that was the first child born for which the father would mourn over that child's death. Be as it may, based on these different definitions, it will emerge that Yesh B'chol HaNachla, there is a type of firstborn who's considered to be a firstborn only for the laws of inheritance, V'ein B'chol HaKoyein. He's not considered, however, to be a firstborn regarding the obligation of giving 5 Sela coins to a Kohen. There are also people who are considered to be a firstborn regarding redemption, giving coins to a Kohen, but not regarding inheritance. There are those who are considered to be firstborns both for inheritance and for giving 5 Sela coins to a Kohen. And there's a type of firstborn who's actually not considered to be, halachically speaking, a firstborn, neither for the laws of inheritance nor for the laws of redemption with a Kohen. What is considered to be somebody who's in the category of a firstborn for the laws of inheritance? So he's going to be a firstborn of the father. But he's not considered a firstborn regarding redemption to a Kohen. One who is born after a stillborn, one who is born dead, and that baby poked out its head whilst it was still alive, and then it put its head back in, and only then was the other child born. For example, let's say they were twins. This second child, which is the only one to survive, is not considered to be a firstborn regarding the laws of a Kohen, because the womb of the mother was opened up first by the other child who ended up being born dead. However, regarding the laws of being a firstborn of the father, since the first child didn't end up being born alive, this other child is considered to be the first child born and to live, and therefore it's considered to be the firstborn of the father for the laws of inheritance. Or if the other child who was born a stillborn was a fully developed fetus, he had been in the mother's womb for 9 months. However, the head came out dead. It emerged when it was dead. The Mishnah implies that if the child had been fully developed and it poked out its head and then brought it back in and then ended up being born dead, it would nevertheless take the firstborn status, even regarding the laws of inheritance. Of course, it wouldn't be relevant for that child himself. It just means that the other child would not be considered a firstborn, because since the fetus would have been fully developed and it did come out partly while it was still alive, that is considered to be a birth already, and the father would mourn over the death, and therefore the next child is not considered to be the firstborn for even the laws of inheritance. If the mother had aborted previously a fetus which had the appearance of a domestic animal or a wild animal or a bird, it didn't have the form or shape of a human being, the father would not be, he wouldn't mourn over the death of this child. He doesn't view it as being his child. However, at the end of the day, that is the thing which opened up the womb of the mother. So once again, it would be in this category of a firstborn for the laws of redeeming, giving 5 coins to a kohen. And therefore, the next child born from that mother would not be the firstborn. That's the main ramification over here. And for the laws of inheritance, the next child would be considered a firstborn, because this particular child is not considered to be a firstborn regarding the laws of inheritance. The Reb Meir, that is the opinion of Reb Meir. It's only considered to be a firstborn for the laws of redemption, Pidyon HaBen, if it has the shape and form of a human being. Hamapelet sandal, if a woman aborts a fetus which has the shape of a sandal, this comes out of her womb. Sometimes this is the sign of it being born of a different fetus. This itself is not considered to be a fetus, but sometimes when a fetus is produced, it's produced together with one with something like this, and so we need to be concerned that there is a different fetus there. A shilya, or the amniotic sac in which a fetus exists for during the pregnancy, v'shofen merukam, or a fetus, an embryo which has already features of a human being, or if a embryo or fetus comes out of the womb cut up into different limbs. After a woman experienced this, the next child which is born from that woman afterwards is considered to be a firstborn regarding the laws of inheritance, since the father would not have mourned over the death of the first child, because it was never really a live child at all. However, the next child would not be considered a firstborn regarding the laws of Pidyon HaBen, redeeming the firstborn son, since the first form of fetus is that which opened up the womb of the mother. If the father had never had any children, but he married a woman who had already had children, so he's a firstborn of the father, but not of the mother. Even if when she gave birth, Oida Shifcha, she was still a non-Jewish servant, and since then, in Ishtachra, she had been freed and converted upon freedom, or Oida Venochis, in Iskaira, she was a regular non-Jewish woman who gave birth, and now she has converted, and since she became Jewish, she has not given birth yet. Mishabosi Solv Yolda, once she becomes Jewish, then she gives birth to a child. This child is not considered to be a firstborn who opened the mother's womb, and therefore B'chol HaNachla, it would be considered a firstborn for the laws of inheritance, but Ve'ein B'chol HaKoyein, he would not be a firstborn for the laws of giving 5 Siloim to a Koyein. However, Reis HaGlili says, B'chol HaNachla V'la Koyein, he is considered to be a firstborn both for the laws of inheritance and for the laws of giving 5 coins to a Koyein. Shneimar, because the Pasuk says, and the Mishnah didn't quote the entire Pasuk, but only the words which are relevant, Peter Rechem B'Yisrael. The Torah defines this firstborn as one who opened up the womb of the mother, the first one, the first child to open up the womb of the mother, amongst the Jewish people. And Reis HaGlili learns from there that Achyift Rechem B'Yisrael, we only start counting those births which happen, and the ones who open up the womb for the first time once she's already Jewish, and that is the reason why even if she had given birth beforehand, since she was not Jewish at the time, this first child born after she was Jewish would be considered a firstborn for these laws. Now the Mishnah goes on to the second category, those who are considered to be a firstborn in that the father is obligated to give 5 coins to a kohen to fulfill the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen, redeeming his firstborn son. However, that firstborn son is not considered to be a firstborn for the laws of inheritance, and he would not take a double portion. Misha hoylo bonim, if the father had sons already, v'nosa isha shalayolda, and he married a woman who had not yet given birth. Like we mentioned, the main difference in defining the firstborn for the laws of inheritance and for the laws of Pidyon HaBen is that for the laws of inheritance, it depends upon the father, a child for whom he would have mourned over, whereas for the laws of Pidna Ben, it depends on being the one who opened up the womb of the mother. Nisgayrom uberes, v'nishtachrom uberes. If the mother was pregnant for the first time, but she became pregnant when she was not Jewish, or when she was a non-Jewish servant, and while she was pregnant, she converted to become Jewish, or she was freed and thereby converted to become Jewish. In order for one to inherit their father, they must have been conceived when the mother was already Jewish. Otherwise, we view them as being converts themselves, and the rule is that a convert is halachically not considered to be related to his biological parents, and certainly not to his father in this case. And therefore, not only would he not receive a double portion, he wouldn't even receive any inheritance from his father. Now, the law is that if either the father or the mother is a Kohen or a Levi, there is no mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen. Now, if somebody has two wives, which was permitted at the times of the Mishnah, and one of the wives was from the tribe of Levi, or she was a Kohen from a family of Kohanim, but the other woman was not, and they both gave birth to their first child, the father, their husband, is obviously obligated to give five Sela coins to a Kohen, in order to redeem the son who was born from the regular woman who was not from the tribe of Levi. Now what happens if Yoldehi v'Chehenes, if this regular woman and the woman from a family of Koyanim, or Hiolavia, the regular Jewish woman and the woman who came from the tribe of Levi, they both give birth, or he v'Ishashikfa Yolda, a woman who had never given birth and his other wife had already given birth, and they both gave birth right now. But as it may, in all of these cases, one of the babies who was born obligates the father in Pidyon HaBen, and the other one does not. And then the two children got mixed up. It's unknown which is the child who obligates the father in giving the silver coins to the Kohen. The Mishnah is coming to show that that's irrelevant. In terms of the laws of Pidyon HaBen, the father is still obligated to give five silver coins, regardless of which baby is the firstborn. The firstborn who requires redemption. However, regarding the laws of inheritance, this certainly is relevant, because neither of the two children are able to prove to the other that they are the firstborn, and therefore neither of them could take a double portion, and they would split the inheritance equally. Similarly, one who did not wait at least 3 months after their husband divorced them or died, v'niseis, and she got married, v'yolda, and gave birth, v'ein yodua, and it is unknown whether the child who is born very soon afterwards, im ben tishah l'rishayin, is a child who developed for 9 months, and whose father is her original husband, im ben shivah l'achrayin, or whether the fetus was only developed for 7 months, and is a child of her latter husband. Now, if that father later has more children and then dies, this child cannot prove that he is the firstborn. It could be, in fact, that he's not even an inheritor at all, because he could be the child of a different father. So not only can he not take a double portion, he can't even take a single portion, because he can't prove that he's entitled to the inheritance. So all of these fit into the category of Bechor HaKohen, somebody who is a firstborn for the laws of redemption, giving five Sela coins to a Kohen. In this last case, it's definitely a firstborn of the mother, and therefore there is certainly a mitzvah redemption over here. However, the father, or neither of the possible fathers, would be obligated to give that money to the Kohen, because neither of them are definitely obligated. If the Kohen wants to take money from them, he would need to prove it. However, this firstborn child is definitely a firstborn of the mother. It's definitely a child who opened up the womb of the mother. And therefore, when he reaches the age of bar mitzvah, he will need to redeem himself by giving five Sela coins to a Kohen. Now the Mishnah reaches the third category, Ezu b'chol enachla v'la koyein, who is considered to be a firstborn both for the laws of inheritance and for the laws of giving five Sela coins to a koyein. Hamapeles shofir molidom, if the mother aborted, meaning something exited her womb previously, either a chew which was full of blood, molimayim, full of water, moliganinim, full of substances of different colours. This is not considered to be something significant which exited the womb, and it's not considered to be the sign of a real fetus having been formed. It's not halachically considered to be a birth at all. And on a similar note, Hamapeles came in Dogma Chagovim, one who aborts a form which has the appearance of fish or locusts, Shagotsmer Mosim, different types of small animals or insects, Hamapeles Yomar Boim. or if she aborts her child, her fetus, who is beginning to be a human being, but within the first 40 days. All of these are not considered to be real births, and therefore Habu'acharen, the next child, if it is a son, who is born, will be B'chor HaNachu LaKohen, he'll be considered a firstborn, both for the laws of inheritance and for the laws of giving five Sela coins to a Kohen.